In 2025, there were 4.1 billion public certificates issued globally.
Yeah, which is just a staggering number to even visualize.
Right. And the crazy thing is, sometime next year, every single one of those certificates is going to enter this 47-day death spiral.
Exactly. And, the scariest part for the enterprise isn't even that the certificates will expire.
No, it's that the underlying infrastructure, like your DNS, is mathematically and just operationally incapable of renewing them fast enough.
Right.
So if you are listening to this right now, we're assuming you are sitting in the CISO, CTO, or maybe the CIO chair of a mid-tier or large enterprise.
Yeah, you're managing thousands of microservices, global routing, this incredibly fragmented infrastructure stack.
Right. And for decades, the guiding philosophy for public key infrastructure, PKI and DNS, was basically to treat them like plumbing.
Just, set it and forget it.
Exactly. You lay the pipes behind the drywall, you turn the valve, and you just assume the water will flow forever. Welcome to today's deep dive, where we're going to unpack why that is no longer the reality.
Because that plumbing analogy, it fundamentally fails modern infrastructure. I mean, water flows in a continuous binary state, right? It's either on or it's off.
Right.
But cryptographic trust, that is not a continuous resource. It's this highly volatile, highly pressurized, rapidly degrading asset. It requires constant active regeneration.
And that expectation of it being invisible infrastructure, I mean, that is exactly why PKI and DNS failures have quietly become the leading cause of unplanned outages in the enterprise today.
Oh, absolutely. When a certificate expires today, it doesn't just display a little warning padlock in a browser anymore.
No, it severs the API connection between your payment gateway and your inventory database. It completely breaks the internal routing of your Kubernetes clusters.
Yeah, it halts your automated deployment pipelines dead in their tracks.
Right. So for this deep dive, we've got a stack of recent sources in front of us. We're looking at the 2026 Global PKI Research Report from Omdia, some heavy industry primers on DNS and PKI collisions, and technical briefings on decentralized crypto architectures.
Really robust data.
Yeah, and the mission here, our goal for this analysis, is to build a strictly technical, fiercely intellectual case for why your leadership team must prioritize and fund a modernization effort immediately.
And we are looking purely at operational resilience and technical risk here.
Exactly. No vendor pitches, no marketing fluff, just the sheer physics of what is breaking your network. Because right now, the industry is watching this slow motion collision of three massive structural forces.
A perfect storm, really.
Yeah. And I want to jump straight into the first force because it exposes this massive contradiction in how we handle security. We're looking at a mandate that slashes certificate lifespans from a year down to 47 days by 2029.
Right, the CA browser forum mandate.
But if I'm a security engineer, my first instinct is to ask, isn't shrinking the lifespan just treating a symptom?
How do you mean?
Well, if a private key gets compromised, I don't want to wait 47 days for it to die, right? I want to revoke it immediately.
Yeah.
Why are regulators forcing us into this rapid-fire renewal cycle instead of just, fixing the revocation mechanisms?
That's a great question. And it's because massive real-time revocation is an essentially unsolvable problem at internet scale. We actually call this the revocation fallacy.
The revocation fallacy. Unpack that for us.
So historically, the industry relied on certificate revocation lists, or CRLs, and the Online Certificate Status Protocol, OCSP.
Right, OCSP.
Yeah. And the architecture there assumes that whenever a client, so a browser, an API endpoint, a server, whenever it encounters a certificate, it pauses the handshake and queries a central CA database.
To see if that specific serial number has been flagged as compromised, like checking a digital do not fly list before letting the packet through.
Exactly like that. But if we are issuing 4.1 billion public certificates,
plus an exponentially larger number of undocumented internal certificates, right?
Querying a central database for every single TLS handshake across the entire globe, it creates an impossible latency bottleneck.
I mean, just the speed of light alone makes that tough.
It creates a crippling bottleneck. And more importantly, it introduces a massive single point of failure. Look at the mechanics of OCSP for a second. If your application requires high availability, you have a very strict latency budget.
Right. A TLS handshake needs to happen in milliseconds.
Exactly. So if the client queries the OCSP responder and the network path to the CA is congested, maybe due to a BGP routing leak or just a simple DDoS attack on the CA's infrastructure, the client has to make a choice.
What are the options?
It can either do a hard fail, meaning it drops the connection entirely because it can't verify the certificate, or it can soft fail.
Meaning it assumes the certificate is fine and just proceeds with the connection anyway.
Right.
But if the industry defaults to a hard fail, a slow CA basically takes down the entire internet.
Precisely. Every application relying on that CA stops communicating.
Wow.
And because no major browser or enterprise application can afford to take down the internet on a timeout, the industry largely defaults to the soft fail.
Wait, so the client tries to check the revocation status, the query times out, and the client just lets the connection through.
Yeah. It just waves it through.
Yeah.
Which renders the entire revocation apparatus practically useless against an active, sophisticated attacker.
Because they just have to block the OCSP query from reaching the responder, and the client will accept the stolen key?
Exactly. They just DDoS the revocation server, and the door swings wide open.
That is wild. So because the infrastructure fundamentally cannot support real-time revocation without breaking global availability, the EA browser forum and the major root programs like Apple and Google are essentially forcing the expiration date to act as the revocation mechanism.
You nailed it. The regulators are trading the mathematical impossibility of real-time global revocation for the operational burden of continuous rapid issuance.
Which brings us back to that shrinking timeline.
Right. If we look at the timeline mandated for publicly trusted certificates, it maps out a brutal acceleration. Pre-2026, we were at 398 days.
Roughly 13 months.
Yeah. Then, as of March 2026, we dropped to 200 days. Next year, March 2027, mandates 100 days. And the terminal velocity hits in March 2029, which is a maximum lifespan of 47 days.
That structural shift completely breaks legacy PKI.
Oh, shatters it.
Because traditional enterprise PKI architectures, you know, they're typically built around hierarchical CAs and heavy centralized servers. They were engineered for a world where issuance was an annual chore.
Right. You could afford to have a human in the loop. You could afford a ticketing system.
But a 47-day cycle, that means you are rotating keys 8 times a year per workload?
Yeah. And if you have 10,000 workloads, that is a continuous stream of cryptographic churn.
Which leads us directly into the second force slamming into this infrastructure, the explosion of machine identity.
This is huge.
Yeah, because we are no longer just securing an employee's smart card or a static web server.
The identity landscape has completely inverted. Human identities are a relatively static, manageable volume now. The Omdia research actually shows that 61% of modernization efforts are now entirely focused on machine identities.
So we're talking about ephemeral cloud workloads, IoT fleets, containerized microservices.
Server-to-server communications via mutual TLS. In a Kubernetes environment, for example, a pod might spin up, request a certificate, execute a microservice, and terminate 12 hours later.
Right.
The sheer volume of key generation required for that kind of ephemeral compute, it crushes traditional PKI databases.
But the sources push this even further, which I found fascinating. It's not just basic microservices anymore. The survey data shows 73% of IT leaders are pointing to PKI as the critical layer for establishing trust in autonomous AI agents operating on the corporate network.
Yeah, AI agents are the new frontier here.
But I have to challenge this premise a bit because I imagine many CTOs listening are asking the exact same question.
Okay, let's hear it.
An AI agent is ultimately just a software process, right? It's executing code, scraping data, making API calls. If an attacker compromises that agent, or if a rogue agent decides to exfiltrate data, how does legacy PKI fail to secure it? Because at the end of the day, a valid cryptographic key is still just math.
That's a very common pushback.
Yeah.
But the failure lies in the difference between authenticating a mathematical object and authenticating a context.
Okay, break that down for me.
Legacy PKI operates on a very rigid binary assumption. Possession of the private key equals authorization. The CA verifies the math of the digital signature. It does not verify the physical or temporal reality of the entity wielding that signature.
Let me trace the mechanics of that. Let's say an AI agent is running on an authorized server in my Chicago data center.
Okay.
It has a private key loaded into memory to authenticate its internal API calls. An attacker exploits a vulnerability in the agent's container, reads the memory space, and scrapes that private key.
Right. They steal the math.
Exactly. Then the attacker takes that key, loads it onto a shadow server in, I don't know, a different country, and begins making API calls to my internal databases using that stolen key.
Under legacy PKI, your databases will authorize every single one of those malicious calls.
Because the math checks out.
Exactly. The key is mathematically valid. The system has no structural defense against credential theft and remote replay because it literally cannot perceive that the key has moved.
Wow. So how do you fix that? How do you build a trust architecture that can perceive movement? How do you secure an autonomous agent when the key itself can't be trusted in a vacuum?
Modern trust frameworks require binding the cryptographic identity to real-time physical context. We have to move beyond simply verifying the math of the signature, and we begin cryptographically binding the key generation to a hardware fingerprint.
Like the trusted platform module, the TPM?
Exactly. The specific TPM of the server hosting the agent. We enforce strict microsecond clock synchronization, and we validate the geospatial routing telemetry at the exact moment of the handshake.
So the authentication payload isn't just the sign challenge anymore.
No.
It's the sign challenge tightly coupled with the hardware hash and the time drift delta.
Precisely. So if that scraped key is replayed from a cloud instance thousands of miles away, the hardware hash doesn't match the original TPM, the network latency delta alters the clock sync, and the validation fails instantly.
Because the key is useless outside of its original highly specific context.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that level of localized context-aware validation requires pushing the trust verification to the edge of the network. It requires an architecture that can evaluate telemetry in real time without relying on a slow round trip back to a centralized CA database.
And legacy PKI simply lacks the computational layer and the edge presence to perform dynamic context binding like that.
It just wasn't built for it.
Right. So we have lifespans collapsing to 47 days. We have an explosion of ephemeral machine identities. And we have the necessity to bind trust to dynamic hardware telemetry.
Yeah.
And just as the infrastructure begins buckling under this weight, we hit force number three, the post-quantum timeline.
The big one.
The big one. And I want to be very precise here about the threat model, because harvest now, decrypt later isn't a theoretical white paper exercise anymore. It is an active operational reality.
Oh, absolutely. State-sponsored adversaries are currently tapping fiber optic lines and capturing vast oceans of encrypted enterprise traffic.
They can't read the payload today.
No, but they are hoarding the ciphertexts, waiting for the day they spin up a cryptographically relevant quantum computer.
Right, and the moment they achieve that hardware capability, they run Shor's algorithm, they break the prime factorization securing the keys, and they retroactively decrypt your intellectual property.
Exactly. If your organization has proprietary data, trade secrets, or compliance-regulated information with a shelf life extending beyond, say, 5 to 10 years, that data is actively vulnerable as it travels across standard TLS connections today.
That is terrifying.
It is. Mm. And the transition to post-quantum cryptography, or PQC, is accelerating precisely because the timeline for a cryptographically relevant quantum computer is compressing.
Right. And the NIST standards have been finalized now. But we need to define exactly what this upgrade entails because, as the sources point out, terminology traps often derail executive planning.
They really do.
We are not discussing quantum encryption or quantum key distribution, QKD.
No, completely different things. QKD is the reliance on actual quantum physics using entangled photons sent over specialized fiber to generate true randomness.
Right, which is a massive hardware upgrade requiring bespoke physical infrastructure.
Exactly. PQC is fundamentally different. PQC relies on highly complex, entirely new mathematical algorithms that are designed to be resistant to quantum attacks, but they execute on standard classical silicon.
You don't need a quantum computer to run PQC.
No.
Oh.
Instead of relying on the difficulty of factoring massive prime numbers, which quantum computers are incredibly good at PQC, shifts the underlying math to completely different structural problems.
The sources heavily reference ML-Chem, which is governed by FIPS 203.
Right. ML-Chem stands for Module Lattice-Based Key Encapsulation Mechanism.
Lattice-based cryptography. Let's unpack that.
Sure. Lattice-based cryptography operates by constructing a multidimensional grid, often spanning hundreds or even thousands of dimensions.
Okay.
The mathematical challenge involves navigating from a known point in this massive grid to find the closest adjacent intersection, while a deliberate layer of mathematical noise or distortion is added to the coordinates.
So even with quantum superposition, evaluating all possible vectors in a multidimensional lattice with randomized noise remains an astronomically difficult, inefficient problem for a quantum computer.
Exactly. It forces the quantum computer to spend so much time sifting through the noise that the algorithm remains computationally secure.
Got it.
So you use ML-Chem to establish the secure shared secret over the network. Then you pair it with MLDSA, governed by FIPS 204, which provides the post-quantum digital signatures used for verifying machine identity.
But, and this is the kicker, implementing lattice math introduces a severe performance penalty.
A very heavy penalty.
The encapsulation sizes, meaning the actual byte size of the keys and signatures generated by MLChem and MLDSA, are significantly heavier than legacy elliptic curve cryptography.
Right.
If I try to encrypt a massive database payload using asymmetric lattice math, the computational overhead will absolutely crush my network throughput, won't it?
Oh, you bring it to a standstill.
Yeah.
The physics of the network mandate a hybrid architectural approach here. You cannot use asymmetric PQC for bulk data.
So what's the workaround?
You utilize the heavy lattice algorithms, MLChem and MLDSA, exclusively for the initial handshake and the identity proof. You use them to build a secure tunnel.
Okay, just the tunnel.
Right, and once the shared secret is securely passed through that tunnel, you immediately transition the actual payload encryption to standard symmetric cryptography, specifically AES-256-GCM.
Ah, because symmetric encryption, where the same key encrypts and decrypts, is not vulnerable to Shor's algorithm in the same way asymmetric encryption is.
Exactly. A quantum computer running Rover's algorithm can theoretically have the effective security strength of a symmetric key, but 256 bits halved to 128 bits is still considered robustly quantum resistant.
And critically, symmetric cryptography is exceptionally fast.
Yes. Almost all modern enterprise CPUs have dedicated AES-NI hardware instruction sets built directly into the silicon. They can process symmetric encryption at line rate.
So by isolating the PQC math to the initial handshake and relying on hardware-accelerated symmetric math for the beta plane, you achieve quantum resilience without sacrificing the throughput necessary to run a modern enterprise.
That's the hybrid model, yes.
Yet, despite this clear technical path, the Omdia research indicates that only 22% of organizations have fully assessed their cryptographic systems for quantum vulnerabilities.
Only 22%.
We have a massive gap between the necessary architecture and the operational reality.
And that gap is where the outages live.
Exactly. So let's synthesize the collision we just mapped out. We have certificates expiring in 47 days. We have autonomous agents demanding localized, context-aware validation. And we have heavy, lattice-based cryptography altering our payload structures.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. And the instinct is to look at all this and assume the certificate lifecycle management system is the primary bottleneck.
But it's not.
No. The sources reveal a terrifying dependency hidden deeper in the stack. The true breaking point preventing automation isn't the certificate itself.
It is the domain name system, DNS.
Let's talk about DNS, because DNS is widely misunderstood by executive leadership.
Constantly. It is typically viewed purely as the routing layer of the internet, you know, the phone book translating host names to IP addresses.
Right.
But in the context of modern PKI, DNS has evolved into the secret high-frequency bottleneck for digital trust.
To understand why, we have to examine the mechanics of domain control validation, or DCV.
Right. If my organization requests a publicly trusted certificate from a CA, the CA cannot just issue it because we asked nicely.
No, we must mathematically prove that we exert administrative control over the specific domain we are requesting the certificate for.
And the standard automated mechanism for proving this control requires the enterprise to publish a specific temporary cryptographic token as a TXT record within their authoritative DNS zone.
So the CA queries the public DNS, locates the TXT record, verifies the token matches the challenge, and authorizes the issuance.
Simple enough in theory.
But let's trace the operational friction of this process in a large enterprise. Let's say the PKI administrator or maybe a DevOps engineer spinning up a new service needs a certificate.
Okay.
They do not have administrative access to the company's authoritative DNS infrastructure.
Of course not. That access is heavily guarded by the network operations or DNS team because modifying the authoritative zone carries the risk of accidentally misconfiguring a routing record and taking the entire company offline.
Right, it's a classic silo.
Right.
So the engineer requiring the certificate must open an IT support ticket requesting the creation of the specific TXT record.
The ticket enters a queue.
And because DNS changes are high risk, this often triggers a formal change control process requiring managerial approval.
Yep. Eventually, a DNS engineer manually edits the zone file, publishes the record, and updates the ticket.
The PKI engineer receives the notification and triggers the CA to perform the validation check.
And that whole dance takes hours, often days, to execute a single domain validation.
In the old world, when a certificate lasted 398 days, the domain validation reuse window often matched the lifespan of the certificate.
Right, you endured the manual ticketing friction once a year. It was annoying, but it was a tenable status quo.
But the CA browser forum timeline completely destroys this operating model. When certificate lifespans drop to 47 days in 2029, The domain validation reuse window does not just drop to 47 days.
No, it drops to 10 days.
The
10-day mandate fundamentally decouples validation from issuance. If an organization issues multiple certificates on a specific domain or subdomain, which is standard practice for any large application, they must reprove administrative control of that domain every 10 days, regardless of the individual certificate's lifespans.
I really want to frame this for the leadership teams listening because the mechanical reality is staggering. Imagine trying to manage a nuclear reactor.
Okay.
The old process was like taking the reactor offline once a year to slowly and carefully replace the control rods. The 10-day mandate is the equivalent of being forced to change those control rods while the reactor is running at 100% capacity every 10 seconds.
Wow.
And worse, the engineers are still forced to submit a triplicate paper requisition form to the shift manager before they are allowed to touch the machinery.
That's a great analogy.
You cannot ticket your way out of a 10-day recurring cycle. The math simply does not work.
It creates an inescapable operational failure. A manual handoff between the security team and the DNS team that takes 3 days to resolve is incompatible with a 10-day expiration window.
It introduces a chilling new equation for the enterprise. A DNS administrative delay now equals a massive application outage.
Let's unpack the mechanics of that failure too, because historically, if DNS failed, it was a routing issue.
Right, the DNS servers went offline, queries couldn't resolve, the application was unreachable.
Today, your DNS servers can be operating flawlessly. Resolution is lightning fast. But if your internal change management process is too slow to publish the TXT record, or if a manual ticket is dropped in the queue, the automated certificate renewal pipeline is silently blocked.
The CA queries your DNS, fails to find the updated token, and just halts issuance.
Yep. The existing certificate hits its 47-day expiration, the TLS handshake fails, and your application goes dark. You suffer a catastrophic cryptographic outage caused entirely by bureaucratic friction in the DNS layer.
And even if you attempt to brute force this manual process, say you just hire more people to click prove on tickets, the sources highlight a deeply overlooked cascading risk, DNS hygiene, and network physics.
This is where it gets really technical.
Yeah, because what actually happens to these temporary TXT records after the CA verifies them?
In a ticket-based system.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Right. The DNS engineer closes the ticket for the creation of the record, but nobody ever submits a subsequent ticket to delete it.
Never. The validation records just accumulate, quietly ballooning the size of your authoritative zone file.
And this isn't just a messy database issue. This directly impacts the physical limitations of network packets.
Precisely. We have to look at the maximum transmission unit, the MTU, and the payload limits of the user datagram protocol, or UDP.
Okay, break that down.
DNS fundamentally relies on UDP because it is a connectionless, exceptionally fast protocol. The client fires off a query, and the server fires back a response. Historically, standard DNS UDP payloads were strictly limited to 512 bytes to ensure they could pass through any network router without being fragmented.
Now, modern extensions like eDNS Aero allow for larger UDP buffer sizes, but you still eventually hit the hard physical limit of the network path's MTU, right?
Exactly, which is typically around 1,500 bytes. So when an enterprise accumulates hundreds of orphan TXT validation records under a single domain label, the DNS server attempts to package all of those records into the response payload.
And the payload size swells massively.
Right. Once it exceeds the UDP buffer limit, or the network MTU, the UDP packet is either fragmented and dropped by firewalls, or the DNS server sets a truncation flag in the response header.
And the truncation flag tells the client, hey, the answer is too big for UDP. You must reconnect using TCP to get the full response.
Yes, and TCP completely alters the performance profile of the lookup.
Because it requires a handshake.
TCP requires a formal three-way handshake to establish a connection before any data is transferred. It requires state tracking. It adds immediate significant latency to every single DNS query for that domain.
At enterprise scale, adding three round trips of latency to a high-frequency microservice lookup cascades into application timeouts.
Furthermore, many strict firewall configurations or edge case resolver deployments actively block or misinterpret DNS over TCP.
So the fallback fails and you get an outright resolution error.
Exactly. A minor housekeeping chore deleting an old text record metastasizes into a crippling network stability crisis when compressed into a 10-day cycle.
It's unbelievable. The technical necessity is absolute here. You must automate the interaction between your PKI infrastructure and your DNS infrastructure. You need API-driven, machine-to-machine automation, No human ticketing.
But that brings up a massive security friction point that instantly derails these modernization efforts.
Right, because if I'm the CISO, I demand automation to prevent outages. But if I'm the director of network operations, I am staring at a massive blast radius.
And the director of network operations is entirely justified in their resistance. To fully automate domain validation, the PKI system must be granted programmatic access to edit the authoritative DNS zone via an API key or a service account.
And the access controls on many legacy or monolithic DNS platforms are notoriously blunt, right? You often cannot restrict an API key to merely editing a specific TXT record type on a specific subdomain.
No, you have to grant the automation client broad read-write access to the entire zone.
Which means if the PKI automation client is compromised, or if a rogue script malfunctions, the blast radius is total.
The compromised credential doesn't just mess up a certificate validation. It has the administrative power to alter MX records and reroute the entire company's email infrastructure.
It can alter A records and silently siphon internal web traffic to malicious servers.
Exactly. DNS teams will aggressively block this integration if the access cannot be tightly scoped.
So before we discuss the architectural solution to this turf war, we really need to clarify a severe terminology trap that derailed internal planning meetings constantly. The phrase DNS provider is dangerously vague.
Oh, it is a constant point of failure during implementation. Executive teams will frequently mandate that the PKI system integrates with the company's internal DNS resolvers, completely misunderstanding the architecture.
You must differentiate between authoritative DNS and recursive DNS.
Yes.
Authoritative DNS is the absolute source of truth. It hosts the actual zone file. It is the server that the rest of the internet ultimately queries to discover where your infrastructure resides. This is the only place a CA will look for a domain validation token.
Right. Conversely, recursive DNS is the internal service that resolves lookups on behalf of your employees and internal systems.
So when an internal application tries to reach an external API, the recursive DNS server hunts down the IP address, caches it, and returns the result.
But a recursive DNS server does not host your authoritative zone file. It merely caches answers from other servers. Therefore, it is mathematically impossible to use a recursive DNS platform to prove domain control to an external certificate authority.
Pointing your PKI automation at your internal recursive resolvers will result in a 100% failure rate.
Every single time.
So if the friction is this high, if we are battling 10A mandates, UDP, payload fragmentation, and interdepartmental security turf wars over blast radiuses, how is the architecture actually evolving to solve this?
The sources point to a really elegant structural workaround called delegated validation.
Delegated validation? How does that work?
Delegated validation entirely bypasses the internal turf war by decoupling the validation process from full DNS ownership.
Okay.
Instead of requiring the PKI automation to reach into the primary, highly secure authoritative DNS zone to write dynamic TXT records every 10 days, the DNS team makes a single static change. They create a CNAME record for a specific validation subdomain.
For example, something like acme-challenge.yourcompany.com.
Exactly. And a CNAME acts as an alias, a permanent redirection pointer. The DNS team points that CNAME away from their primary infrastructure and redirects it to a completely isolated third-party or highly segmented validation service layer.
So when the CA queries the primary authoritative DNS looking for the TXT record, the primary DNS responds with the CNAME, basically instructing the CO to go look at the isolated validation service.
Exactly. And the automated PKI processes run exclusively within that isolated validation layer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The automation continuously rotates the TXT records on the 10-day cycle without ever needing access credentials to the primary authoritative zone.
That's brilliant. The DNS engineers are removed from the recurring manual loop forever, the blast radius is contained to an isolated subdomain, and the security team achieves the high-velocity automation required by the 47-day mandate.
It is a brilliant architectural pivot.
But you know, this brings us to what I think is the most alarming realization of our entire analysis today. We have just spent, 30 minutes detailing the immense complexity of this infrastructure.
Yeah, the heavy lattice math, the context-aware validation telemetry, the DNS UDP limits, the 10-day delegated CNAME redirection.
If the operational requirements are this sophisticated, How well do large enterprises actually understand their own cryptographic footprint today? I mean, if we need to aggressively automate all of this immediately, what is the baseline starting point for most companies?
Well, the baseline starting point is a crisis of enterprise visibility.
The crisis.
The data from the 2026 Omdia Research Report exposes a terrifying operational blindness. Only 34% of surveyed organizations possess a complete, up-to-date inventory of their certificates.
Roughly one in three enterprises actually knows what is running on their network.
It is worse when you look at the remaining data. 50% of organizations admit they only have a partial inventory. They know they have massive blind spots.
And the rest.
16% of executive leaders confess they have absolutely zero idea how many certificates they are utilizing or where they are deployed.
Nearly one in five enterprises is flying completely blind on the fundamental cryptographic infrastructure that keeps their revenue-generating applications online.
Yes. And you cannot secure, you cannot automate, and you mathematically cannot rotate what you do not know exists.
And the structural reasons for this visibility gap are, as you pointed out earlier, deeply ingrained in modern network design. Consider network microsegmentation.
Right. By design, we use microsegmentation to aggressively isolate specific workloads and create zero-trust boundaries to prevent lateral movement by attackers.
But if a central IT discovery scanner cannot penetrate the firewall rules of a highly restricted microsegment, any certificates operating within that enclave remain entirely hidden from the centralized inventory.
Exactly. Furthermore, we are dealing with the reality of decentralized cloud development. The shadow IT problem has evolved.
It's no longer just employees buying software on a corporate credit card.
No, it is DevOps teams utilizing infrastructure as code to spin up hundreds of containerized services in AWS or Azure. To move quickly, they often bypass centralized IT entirely.
They utilize automated pre-public certificate authorities, or they spin up their own localized internal CAs using open source tools.
And those certificates are completely undocumented by the central security team. But when they expire in 47 days, the microservice fails, the application crashes, and it's still the central IT team that gets paged in the middle of the night to fix the outage.
The sources detail a specific modernization case study that illustrates the sheer scale of this disconnect. They refer to a major organization undergoing PKI modernization as Customer Zero.
Right. Before deploying automated discovery tools, leadership estimated their total footprint was between 3,000 and 7,000 certificates.
Which is a completely standard, reasonable estimate for a centralized legacy architecture.
It is. But when they finally deployed a comprehensive, deeply integrated discovery engine capable of scanning edge devices, cloud enclaves, and localized key stores.
The actual number was over 18,000 certificates.
18,000. They miscalculated their risk exposure by an order of magnitude.
They had 11,000 undocumented certificates silently ticking down to expiration across their infrastructure.
This forces a brutal economic calculation for the CIOs and CTOs analyzing this data. How are organizations currently attempting to manage this fractured, wildly underestimated landscape?
Well, astonishingly, roughly 47% of enterprises are still attempting to track this infrastructure using error-prone, manually updated spreadsheets.
Spreadsheets.
Yeah. They might possess a legacy certificate lifecycle management or CLM tool for a specific segment of their environment, but it remains heavily siloed. And then there is the reliance on what the research bluntly labels tribal knowledge.
Tribal knowledge is a catastrophic single point of failure. It means the intricate deployment process for the certificate securing, say, the legacy mainframe or the custom payroll application resides entirely within the memory of a single senior engineer.
Right. If that engineer leaves the company, takes a vacation, or simply forgets the undocumented 14-step manual installation process, the system inevitably crashes upon expiration.
Let's quantify the labor cost of this, because the math is undeniable. Our sources indicate that without end-to-end API automation, the manual, human-driven process of renewing a single certificate, identifying its expiring, generating the CSR, manually routing the DNS validation ticket, retrieving the issued certificate, and restarting the endpoint server.
All of that consumes roughly 1 hour of engineering time per certificate.
Right. So apply that 1 hour metric to the customer zero reality of 18,000 certificates.
That's 18,000 hours of engineering labor. But the calculation gets much, much worse. In 2029, under the 47-day mandate, every single one of those public certificates must be rotated roughly 8 times a year.
So 18,000 certificates multiplied by 8 rotations.
Equals 144,000 hours of engineering labor dedicated solely to copying and pasting cryptographic text files.
The labor cost is economically ruinous.
It is entirely unsustainable. Every hour, a highly compensated DevOps engineer or security analyst spends manually copying a TXT record into a legacy DNS portal is an hour stolen from actual high-value security architecture.
It is an hour not spent threat hunting. It is an hour not spent analyzing the governance of AI autonomous agents. You are actively burning your most critical engineering talent on a repetitive compliance chore that structurally cannot be executed fast enough by humans to prevent an outage.
Which demands an answer to the ultimate organizational question. If this infrastructure dictates the survival of the enterprise, who actually owns the modernization mandate?
The survey data reveals a massive ownership vacuum here. The prevailing sentiment across the enterprise is essentially everyone utilizes PKI, but no one actually owns it.
When forced to identify a final decision maker, the survey indicates that 48% of the time, the responsibility defaults to the CISO.
And relying exclusively on the CISO is a deeply flawed organizational structure.
Why is that?
Well, the CISO is fundamentally responsible for defining security policy, assessing risk, and mandating cryptographic standards. But PKI is a sprawling operational utility that cuts across every single technical discipline.
Right. It dictates routing logic for the networking team. It dictates build pipelines for DevOps. It dictates identity access for the business units.
Exactly. So how do you restructure ownership to execute a modernization effort of this scale?
The sources strongly advocate for a formal triad model. It cannot reside solely within the security silo.
Okay, so who makes up the triad?
You require the CISO to define the stringent post-quantum policies and context-aware trust standards. But you must have the CTO deeply integrated, because it is the CTO's site reliability engineering and DevOps teams who bear the crushing burden of the manual volume.
They're the ones who have to actually integrate the automated mesh into the CI/CD deployment pipelines.
Exactly. And finally, you require the CIO because they manage the overarching business units that are the primary consumers of these digital identities.
The strategic triad.
Right. Alternatively, some of the case studies suggest establishing a dedicated cryptographic center of excellence, a neutral policy owner sitting outside the direct reporting lines of both the CIO and CTO.
What's their mandate?
Their sole mandate is to define enterprise cryptographic standards, select the overarching automation frameworks, and monitor global compliance without attempting to micromanage the day-to-day deployments of the individual business units.
Ah, so their function is to provide the architectural guardrails, not to become a deployment bottleneck.
Exactly. So we have quantified the visibility gap. We have detailed the economic drain of manual labor. We have mapped the complex physics of the 10-day DNS mandate and the post-quantum lattice algorithms.
It's quite a picture.
It is. The final synthesis for leadership requires answering the immediate architectural question. How do you actually adapt to this new reality?
You adapt by accepting that the infrastructure has permanently changed. The transition from a manual and reactive posture to an automated and proactive operating model is no longer a luxury.
It's not an optional phase 3 item on a roadmap.
No. It is the absolute minimum baseline required to keep an enterprise online. It is the only operating model permitted by the regulatory physics of a 47-day certificate cadence and a 10-day domain validation cycle.
You cannot outwork this problem with spreadsheets.
No, you can't. The modernized state demands a radical departure from monolithic infrastructure. The sources heavily outline a shift toward decentralized, software-defined cryptographic architectures, specifically the concept of a QPKI mesh.
Let's dive into the mechanics of that mesh. The fundamental architectural shift is moving away from the massive, centralized, hardware-heavy certificate authority server that every endpoint must continuously query over the network.
Because as we discussed regarding the OCSP revocation fallacy, that central server inevitably becomes a latency bottleneck and a single point of failure.
Right. So a decentralized mesh architecture completely inverts the model. It handles machine identity and data encryption in a highly localized, lightweight layer pushed directly to the edge of the network.
But how does the mesh maintain consensus and establish trust if it isn't constantly checking back with a central authority?
It utilizes distributed consensus protocols and localized trust anchors. The authentication happens peer-to-peer between the endpoints. They utilize the heavy, NIST-approved post-quantum algorithms, MLChem and MLDSA, to establish the highly secure handshake locally.
Oh, I see. They verify the identity based on immediate local telemetry. analyzing the hardware TPM fingerprint and the microsecond clock sync directly at the edge without requiring a slow round trip back to a centralized database.
Exactly. But practically speaking, you cannot just rip out a mature legacy enterprise PKI system overnight and replace it with an edge mesh. The disruption would be catastrophic.
Right. It requires a phased hybrid deployment. You maintain your traditional highly audited centralized PKI architecture strictly as the control plane.
It remains the ultimate root of trust, managing long-lived root certificates and overarching enterprise policy.
However, you deploy the automated rapid rotation mesh engines at the data plane.
The data plane being the actual edge execution environments, the Kubernetes clusters, the IoT sensors, the autonomous AI agents.
Exactly. You utilize the decentralized mesh to absorb the brutal high-velocity cryptographic churn, the 47-day rotations, the ephemeral machine identities where traditional PKI shatters.
And critically, these mesh engines are engineered for asynchronous make-before-break key rotations.
Explain the mechanics of a make-before-break rotation. How do you swap a cryptographic key on an active, heavily utilized API connection without dropping the TCP session?
The mesh handles the rotation out of band. While the current encrypted session is actively passing payload data, the mesh nodes negotiate the new post-quantum handshake and establish the new shared secret in the background.
Ah.
Once the new secure tunnel is ready, the mesh smoothly transitions the encryption state without ever interrupting the underlying TCP connection. The application layer never even detects the rotation.
You achieve the rigorous auditability of centralized PKI, combined with the extreme survivability and execution speed of a decentralized mesh at the edge.
And the operational return on this architecture is massive. The Omdia research explicitly notes that organizations successfully implementing these automated decentralized frameworks report a 60% reduction in certificate-related outages.
A 60% reduction in downtime directly translates to millions of dollars in preserved revenue and operational stability.
The architecture works. The technology is proven. But the research also reveals a sobering reality regarding executive execution. 75% of organizations state they intend to modernize their cryptographic infrastructure within the next 24 months.
Yet only approximately 25% are actively implementing these architectures today.
The gap between acknowledging the risk and executing the modernization is massive. And in that gap, technical debt and critical vulnerabilities accumulate rapidly.
We have spent this entire deep dive rigorously analyzing your internal architecture. We have mapped your visibility constraints, your DNS blast radiuses, and your automation frameworks. But the final imperative requires you to look beyond your own internal perimeter.
You must look at your third-party supply chain.
Consider this scenario carefully. Let's assume your engineering teams execute perfectly. You deploy the hybrid post-quantum mesh. You implement delegated validation via CNAME redirection to completely isolate your DNS automation.
Your internal environment is highly resilient, rotating keys seamlessly every 47 days.
What happens to your business when your most critical tier one vendors fail to do the same?
Oh, wow. Yeah. If the external logistics platform that manages your global shipping routes or the vendor supplying the API for your primary payment gateway fails to solve the 10-day DNS mandate, their infrastructure will go dark.
If a state actor leverages a quantum capability to break the standard asymmetric cryptography of a critical cloud provider, their data is exposed.
Your perfectly automated internal mesh will aggressively attempt to connect to their systems, and it will find nothing but dead endpoints. Your internal resilience cannot insulate you from their catastrophic failure. You inherit their outage.
It forces a completely different conversation with your procurement and risk teams. The operational mandate isn't just about fixing your own plumbing anymore.
It is about demanding verifiable structural proof that the vendors you rely on have fundamentally rebuilt theirs. Do they have a mathematically sound strategy for the 47-day mandate? Have they isolated their DNS validation processes? Are they actively testing hybrid post-quantum architectures?
Because if your critical supply chain is still relying on manual spreadsheets and tribal knowledge to manage their trust infrastructure, your 60% reduction in outages will evaporate the moment their certificates expire.
The days of invisible static infrastructure are permanently over. The physics of digital trust have changed, and the architecture must adapt immediately.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.